This is Channel 253. Channel 253 is sponsored by Alaska Airlines. I'm Nate Bowling and I fly Alaska. To book your next trip, go to alaskaair.com. This is the Nerd Farmer Podcast, a national conversation through a local lens. Greetings, greetings. This is Nate Bowling, host of the Nerd Farmer Podcast, coming to you live from the Beyond Reproach, fantabulous Moonyard Studios here in gorgeous North Tacoma. Farm fam, many of you follow my personal Twitter account, and if you do, you may have seen an odyssey I went through in early January. As many of you know, my wife is an organizer with the group Tacoma Against Nazis and is active combating white supremacy here in the city of Tacoma. I personally am pretty outspoken about my feelings about white supremacists. They suck and then kiss my ass. And I've been pretty loud online on my feelings about them, in particular the neo-Nazi skinheads who we have. The neo-Nazis we have here who were part of the Hammerskins, which is a conversation we'll have down the road. I woke up on a Sunday morning to find a flyer from the Patriot Front on my front porch that said, "Better dead than red." And so because of the work that I do and my wife does, I assume that we're being targeted because I'm a public figure and like my house isn't super, super secret. Like you can figure out if you can do a Google search, I guess. I posted online about that and then found out that actually not just my house had been flyered, but my entire block had. And as we walked our block and kind of collected this because I don't want my neighbors to see fascist hate in our yard, we realized that essentially our entire neighborhood did. And as the day kind of unwound, we realized that neo-Nazis here in the Northwest had actually dropped their brochures in East Tacoma, my neighborhood, in West Tacoma, where reporter Ashley Gross lives, former guest on the show, in Olympia, in Edmonds, and in Port Orchard. And so this is basically one of the largest mass distributions that fascists have committed in recent history here in the Northwest. And one of the things that's really, really important for me is making sure my audience is informed on the issues and knows how to combat white supremacy. I've written in the past, and I'm going to say here right now, that black folks have been trying to end white supremacy and fight white supremacists in America for 400 years. It's the job of white Americans, middle-class white Americans, working-class white Americans, everyday people like you, not Antifa, not activists, people like you, to fight white supremacy. And so we're going to have that conversation today. I shared an article on Twitter from the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a great resource. And just as a stroke of luck, the author of the article was like, "Hey, I wrote that and I live in Seattle." And so I invited him to come down. And so I'm sitting here right now with David Nywert, and we are going to have a conversation about what we call the fash. So, David, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me, Nate.
I want to start by asking you a question that I'm pretty sure I have my head around, but I want to make sure the audience is kind of on board. It appears to me that there has been a dramatic change in the American political climate with white supremacy and right-wing extremism post-2016 election, and that the fascists feel emboldened by the current political environment and the current president. Would you say that's a true statement?
100%. In fact, it's horribly underreported. I think that it's something that the mainstream media has really failed to confront, is how deep and profound the sea change has been. Essentially, Trump's election gave permission for all of these people who have been building up decades of hate in their hearts to act. He lifted the lid off the national lid and all the creepy crawlies came out. And that's what we're seeing. In the first month after his election, we saw at the Southern Poverty Law Center, we saw nearly 1,000 hate incidents be reported to our offices in Montgomery, Alabama, which is just a phenomenal escalation. Yep. Typically, we see around 35, 40 hate crimes a week nationally. This was unbelievable escalation. And I looked through the data on this, on these incidents that we had gathered and sort of sifted through it and did a calculation near almost exactly half of these incidents, about 48%, actually featured people using Donald Trump's name or his rhetoric. They actually – we have a number of hate crimes where people are going out and chanting Trump, 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 Trump in the face of minorities as a means of threatening and intimidating them, and it often accompanies actual assaults. Yeah. We also are seeing, you know, vandalism with Trump's rhetoric, make America great again, or what we see is things like make America white again stuff. Yeah. And Trump's going to send you back rhetoric accompanying actual assaults as well. So, yeah, about half of them. And you know, the rate declined significantly after that first month. It went back to closer to normal.
So the normal background racism.
But not really, though. We've actually, in the 2 years that he has been president now, well, we know that 2017, both 2016 and 2017 saw significant increases in hate crimes overall in this country. We saw a big increase in 2016, according to the FBI stats. And then the 2017 stats came out just a couple months ago. And it was insane. It was actually, yeah, it was much worse, and it isn't going to slow down. So, you know, a lot of Trump's defenders will say, "Well, he's denounced these hate groups."
He hasn't.
Here's the thing about it: he's denounced them exactly twice, and he has done these anodyne disavowals that nobody believes, especially not the white supremacists that he's denouncing. They actually laugh at his disavowals.
Yeah, and that's actually where there's a couple of things that I want to plug into that you said. Yeah. One, you talked about like the Trump iconography and Trump language.
Yeah.
I had recent graduates who were my former students who were at Washington State University. And so some members – well, hold on. Some Trump supporters at Washington State University actually erected a Trump wall on campus on election
day. James Alsop.
And that's where I was going. So James Alsop, who was the president of the College Republicans at WASU at that point, was somebody who was present in Charlottesville at the protests and is active here. And so one of the things that I think about when we talk about white supremacy and neo-Nazism there's a bunch of things that get conflated that I want to separate out during this interview.
Mm-hmm.
I want to take like the militiamen and the 3%ers and kind of put them on one side. And then I want to talk about the neo-Nazis because a lot of folks put them in the same bucket. And I think that there's the anti-government extremism and there's the white supremacist fascism. And all of it's problematic, but there's degrees of problematicness, if that makes sense. Okay.
They are interconnected, but the Patriots aren't as violent. Essentially, or quite as they're problematic in different ways.
And patriots, like the actual word patriots, not Patriot Front, Patriot Prayer, who are violent and thuggish.
Yes.
Okay. So with that kind of context for the audience, so we know there's an escalation. Can you kind of walk us through who are the groups that are active in Washington State and what are some of their larger national affiliations? So like for the audience, like what should they be on the lookout for and seeing in the community?
Well, certainly the group that you encountered, Patriot Front, is one of the most dangerous and vile and vicious groups. As I explained in the piece for Hate Watch, they are overtly fascist. I mean, they are expressly fascist.
Yes.
They embrace fascism on their website and every aspect of it, including, of course, genocide of non-whites. I mean, they're just as vile and vicious as you can imagine. There are, interestingly, all of these organizations, at least the ones that we're dealing with here, had their origins online. And we should talk about that aspect of it because it's really important, especially for young people. But to go back to your question about who we're dealing with here. So Patriot Front is really mostly online organization, but they do stuff on the streets, especially spreading out flyers. And we know that one of their members was involved in a hate crime in Gig Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been other smaller, lesser incidents, but mostly they're at this point still interested in recruiting people, recruiting young people, and that's largely
what
they're about.
I want to jump in here because the recruitment thing is really important.
Yeah.
So the flyers they distributed said better dead than red,
which
is an anti-communist message.
Yes.
And one of the things that people who are not thoughtful or people who are willfully ignorant, I think, are missing with this is that what neo-Nazi white supremacist groups do is they lead with the anti-communist, anti-immigrant language in order to hope to infiltrate the fringes of the conservative movement.
Right.
So they open with an anti-communist message and then put their fascist URL on there, knowing that some conservatives who have anti-communist sentiments will cape for them online.
That's
because
right.
They hate communists, I hate communists, they can't be that bad.
Right.
And then they can be lured into the organization.
Yep. The enemy of my enemy sort of thing. Absolutely. No, that is part of the recruitment process. They look for all kinds of openings for recruiting people. One of the most interesting things that certainly I've seen in the last 5 years is how they've been recruiting in the online gaming community.
Interesting.
They recruit young people. And particularly gamers, first through sort of these misogynistic appeals about mostly to boys who are resentful of feminists, right?
And boys is the right word, by the way, not men.
They typically are. No, their recruitment demographic is white males between the ages of 13 and 30. And many of the 20-year-olds are not exactly socially mature. So they're recruiting these people who are already having social difficulties in a lot of cases. And they're telling them, your life sucks because there's actually a conspiracy. What happens is that they'll get into these gaming chat rooms like on Steam. You know, how when you play video game or computer games online, you're chatting with the other players online, right? And you get in these chat rooms with them, and that's where they start actually spreading their ideology.
They're like the Jews and the blacks and the women are holding you down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, they start out saying, yeah, but the feminists are just, you hate those feminists, but they're actually just sort of the tip of the spear. The real thing is cultural Marxism. And they start handing them this white nationalist
crap. You said the term cultural Marxism.
Yeah.
And this is one of the terms that so honestly, I have a couple of people who I really, really respect who I disagree with their beliefs politically, but I think they're principle grounded conservatives and they throw this term cultural Marxism around. Can you please just for the audience's benefit, define that term and then explain why that term is hogwash?
Yeah. Cultural Marxism is supposedly the idea that, Marx, of course, if you actually read Das Kapital or anything, he rejects the idea that culture has anything to do with economics, and he insists on a purely economic analysis. But there was a wing of thought within certain far-left schools in Europe that began in the 1920s and 30s called the Frankfurt School. It's a pretty minor school of academic thought, but in the 1990s, somebody seized on the idea that this minor school was responsible for the decay of Western civilization.
Sure.
A guy named William Lind ran the Free Congress Foundation. He was this very far-right Christian nationalist figure. And he coined the term cultural Marxism in about 97. Stole it, swiped it from this school. It wasn't actually in wide use. It was sort of a derisive term within these academic circles. He seized upon this idea of cultural Marxism and started spreading the idea that this obscure school of academics was actually responsible for the spread of rock and roll and all these other, basically liberal democratic culture, and including multiculturalism, which is utter nonsense. If you know the history of multiculturalism, it goes way back to the early 20th century, right? Franz Boas, it actually originated in the Northwest. I don't know if you know that, but
you're appealing to the green
ring
me right now.
but let's not go off in the weeds here. But that's what they are claiming. That's what these people claim. And it got promulgated in the early 2000s by Pat Buchanan and other white nationalists. They spun it up into this very large sort of very broad conspiracy theory that affected a lot of things. And it was actually Patrick Buchanan was one of the main people spreading this hoax claim or this hoax, that calling it cultural Marxism. And it got picked up by the early versions of the alt-right, mm-hmm. Richard Spencer and his organization, and they started using cultural Marxism as one of their main recruitment tools for the alt-right, beginning in about 2009, 2010. And he was picking it up from white nationalists like Jared Taylor and Peter Brimlow from VDare. All these white nationalist hate groups, you know, were very much spreading the idea of cultural Marxism. But somehow, because it got spread on 4chan and spread into the internet, because people don't understand its origins, it became very much mainstreamed and has been picked up by all kinds of conservatives.
Mainstream conservatives.
Mainstream conservatives who use it now as though it's a real thing. And it's just important to understand that it actually is a hoax. Yeah. There is no such thing as cultural Marxism.
It's a boogeyman like the Soros conspiracy or like the international Jewry from the Protocols of Elders of Zion.
It is fundamentally the Protocols theory reshaped and recast for the 21st century for our new age. And of course, George Soros is the chief boogeyman. Who knows who they'll pick when Soros passes away? There'll be some other Jew, no
doubt.
That's
exactly the point I was going to make. And we'll get back to the local groups, by the way.
Frankfurt School was mostly a bunch of Jewish professors.
Jewish professors.
Yeah.
George Soros, international Jewry, cultural Marxism. In the end, that's still – it's anti-Semitism in the end.
Right.
And one of the points that I've been making online is that – so many of the early communists were Jewish. And so when white supremacists are using anti-communism stuff, they're actually doing anti-communism in a two-way dog whistle.
Yeah.
One, it's anti-Jew. And then also, if you go back and like know a nugget about World War II, who were the communists and who were the Nazis? So if you're saying you're anti-communist,
That was Hitler's. That was Hitler's big talking point. He called it something what was it? Bolshevism. Anyway, it was cultural Bolshevism. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was the same thing.
Okay,
exact same claim.
I'm going to bring us back to the beginning of this, though. So, the groups that are active here in our region, you mentioned Patriot Front, and by the way, local anti-fascists have identified many of the members of Patriot Front. I ain't trying to shade anybody's respiratory system or health, but like these folks who like consider themselves to be the master race, like actually couldn't win a foot race.
Yeah.
We're dealing with a bunch of young 20-somethings. Many of them live at home. And you're right. They're just sitting here pumping out this hate from online. I have a concern as a teacher about YouTube algorithms and what students watch and what young white males watch when unsupervised. But I'm going to push that back to segment number two. And let's go back to the local situation. So besides Patriot Front, who are some other groups that listeners need to be aware of and know about?
Well, along the same lines, certainly these online entities and the ones that are recruiting young men are some of the most concerning. And that includes not just Patriot Front, but also here we've got a group called Adam Waffen SS. There's a terrific report on them from ProPublica that I urge everyone to read if they can.
And we'll link that in the show notes. I was actually reading that this morning.
Yeah. And they we've got a guy up in the Bellingham area who has been, taking them out and doing training with these guys. And those guys actually want to go out and train to kill people. They're very secretive. And they all came out of this one online forum called Iron March that's now defunct. But both Adam Waffen and Patriot Front and a couple of these other Vanguard America, which was, of course, James Field's group, grew out of Iron March.
They're
all related to each other.
For the audience's benefit, James Fields is?
He's the young man who ran over Heather Heyer in Charlottesville, Virginia on August 12th.
So he was a part of the organization and Patriot Front came from that organization as a split off.
Yes, that's exactly right. And they all originated with this Iron March set, but and so they're all pretty closely related. They certainly get along ideologically, but they'll, you know, they also have their internecine quarrels, like all far right groups do.
So those are the neo-Nazi organizations.
Those are the online sort of alt-right neo-Nazi organizations, and there's also Daily Stormer book clubs that are forming. Mostly we're seeing those like in the Portland area, and these are Portland. They're not really reading books. It's social organizing.
Sorry, if they're not really reading books, I'm like.
If they are, it's the Turner Diaries and sure. Stuff like that, or Protocols of the Seven Elders of Zion. But yeah, it's basically Daily Stormer organizing, and Daily Stormer, of course, is apparently the premier neo-Nazi website in the country right now.
So moving from the neo-Nazi groups to the more just fascist groups?
Well, there's this zone of people that are sort of in between the more mainstreamed patriot militia groups, who are also very far right. But in between, we have these groups like the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer, who are doing these free speech rallies and all that sort of thing that I've been covering for the last year and a half here, all along the West Coast. They're essentially street brawlers who go to – basically, it's a bunch of right-wing guys from often rural and ex-urban areas. Some of these guys actually are in good shape. Some of them are not. But they're more of a mix than what you were describing for our would-be alt-righters. The Patriot Prayer guys are kind of a mix. They actually came out of that sort of survivalist doomsday prepper origins, but they are very much enmeshed in that whole patriot movement, New World Order, militia belief system, you know, the idea that the black helicopters are coming to take everybody away.
Well, and that's the next division, right? So, and it's back to the point about, so white supremacists aren't stupid and fascists aren't stupid.
Yeah.
So they structure their language in a way that appeals to conservatives, to appeal them off of the movement. And so like, hello, I'm proud to be American. Yeah. I'm a patriot. I pray. So let's like Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer are like focus group perfect names to peel off uninformed or low information conservative voters and conservatives and then make them fascist.
Yeah. And they do it interestingly, particularly Proud Boys, they do it through this ethos of violence because it is about going out and beating the crap out of anti-fascists on the street. That's what they're about. I mean, really, that's the only reason they do this. They say, well, we're about free speech or we're opposing gun control or we're opposing this or that or whatever. They come up with just about any excuse they can to hold these street protests in Portland or Seattle, wherever they're going. And it's like, you know, it would be the same, trust me, if a bunch of black-clad anti-fascists went to Colfax, Washington and held a street rally telling everybody in Colfax that they're a bunch of depraved Nazis out there. I mean, that's what these guys are doing. They're going out there trying to start fights, right? And so that's what why they do these rallies in the cities. They're basically trolling the leftists of Portland, hoping that they can demonstrate that their innate violence and innately violent natures. Early on, the folks on the left were, you know, giving them what they wanted. They finally figured out that they were being trolled, and I think it's been an ongoing process of dealing with these guys. But they're very white nationalist. The SPLC designates the Proud Boys a hate group, but not a specific type. They're more of general hate because what they really are is a sort of potpourri of hate. Yeah. They hate women. They hate blacks. They hate immigrants.
They call themselves Western chauvinists.
Western chauvinists. Exactly.
So working from the far fringe and like the dangerous whatever, we have Adam Waffen over here and then Patriot Front's kind of here. And then we're putting the Proud Boys and Patriot Prayer in this next kind of bucket.
Yeah.
So then over here, and I know people can't see my hands, and this here isn't helpful to you, but I'm moving in the other direction. Over here, you have the anti-government militia movement, which has – it's really interesting to me because there's – how do I want to say this? There are racists who are present in those organizations, but I don't think that they're present there for racism. I think that they bring their racism to the organization, and the organizations actually are what they say. They're like anti-government, anti-black helicopter, anti-anti-anti.
Yeah. I mean, that definitely is what they organize around, and a lot of people are recruited to those movements because they actually, you know, have those paranoid fears that the government is going to try to enslave us. Yeah. And, you know, they've been watching Alex Jones too much and whatever.
Oh, but they, but they're not – Alex Jones. Can you not bring Alex Jones up? Man. Sorry, you were saying. You were saying. I'm stressed out now.
Yeah, no, that's a trigger point. But, of course, that's kind of the point, is that these guys all operate within this sort of alternative universe that they create for themselves. And that's the one thing that they all share. From the neo-Nazis, the really radical far-right neo-Nazis, all the way to the more seemingly mainstream constitutionalists, they all share this alternative universe, this epistemological bubble that they create for themselves. I call it Alt-America, the title of my book. And but it's essentially a world comprised of these conspiracy theories and alternative facts and things like that. And, you know, it's how they, you know, they form these whole communities amongst themselves. And they feed amongst themselves, feed this conspiracist worldview. And it's really weird because, of course, conspiracism initially feels empowering, right? You feel like, oh, I've got secret knowledge and nobody else has, right? But in the end, it's actually incredibly disempowering because what it really does is it separates you from everybody else in the world, separates you from it definitely drives a wedge between you and your family and your friends. It also drives a wedge between you and your community. It makes you believe, but the bigger thing is the narrative. The overarching narrative of conspiracism is this idea that we're up against forces so large and nefarious that you have no chance against them. And ultimately, your best thing you can do for yourself is go get a cabin in the woods and build a bomb shelter, right? And cut yourself off from the rest of society. And that's sort of the whole point of these things. These things are profoundly anti-democratic. Yeah. This is about an attack on democracy. It's getting people to believe that joining arms democratically and fighting and waging the difficult work of democracy isn't worth the effort because it's all a joke, right? We can't do anything against these nefarious Jewish forces or whatever force, you know, the New World Order is. So ultimately, it's really deeply disempowering, and this is part of why so many people who go down these conspiracy rabbit holes eventually turn violent. Yep. Because they're really isolated and they're really frustrated and angry and paranoid and fearful.
Okay. So we're going to take a break here.
Okay.
And when we come back, we're going to talk about the militia movement, preppers, the Bundys, and I'm going to try to avoid talking about QAnon because I don't like finger painting intellectually. So yeah. We'll be back.
Okay.
Hey, fam. This is Nate Bowling. I'm pleased to announce that this episode of the Nerd Farmer podcast is sponsored by my alma mater, Pierce College. This podcast is inspired by what I do in the classroom, creating a nerd culture, where being an informed citizen is the norm. But here's the truth. If I'm a nerd farmer in my classroom now, it's because teachers like Professor Simpson and Professor Payne at Pierce College farmed me first. I arrived at Pierce College a 17-year-old skinny kid, and I left a man. The kind of experience I had at Pierce College are why the school is one of the top 10 finalists for the Aspen Prize. You may or may not have heard of the Aspen Institute, but this international think tank rates Pierce College as one of the top 10 best community colleges in the nation. Pierce College has a much higher graduation or transfer rate than the national average for community colleges. And they have strong programs to help veterans succeed, something that helped me as a reservist. We won't know who wins the Aspen Prize until next spring, but just being included in the short list is an incredible honor for Pierce College and our entire community. If you want to learn more, visit pierce.ctc.edu. Congrats to Pierce College, and thanks for sponsoring the pod, and thanks for being the place where I got my start. And we're back. Hey, Farm Fam, I hope you're enjoying the episode. a really quick reminder. Here at Channel 253, we are doing, it's not journalism, it's more like storytelling. And here you're getting stories that you wouldn't get anywhere else from perspectives. Like, where else are you going to get the local SPLC writer to come down and talk for an hour about local fascist movements? If you value the work that we do, I'm going to ask you, please, go to channel253.com/membership and sign up for a membership. It is $4 a month. Think about the fact that this show, at least, puts out 2 episodes a month of what I think is pretty damn good content. I think it's worth $4 a month. So, thanks. More good news, by the way. Channel 253 has renewed its partnership with your favorite and my favorite local airlines, Alaska Airlines. So if you see me sitting in 6A asleep, leave me alone. But if I'm awake, throw me some dap, because my name's Nate Bowling, Alaska Airlines MVP Gold, and I fly Alaska. To book your next trip, go to alaskaair.com. So, David, that's a funny transition. Alaska Airlines, David. So, David.
I use Alaska all the time, by the way.
Hey, because you have taste, sir. You have taste. You were talking about the power of conspiracy thinking and the work that it does. Mm-hmm. And when you say conspiracy, my head immediately goes to a book you mentioned earlier on, The Turner Diaries. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, could you make a connection between the militia movement of the Clinton administration and like the black helicopter Oklahoma City like situation that we had in the 1990s, yeah, and then the reemergence of the militia movement, which is anti-government and adjacent to the fascist movement, but I don't think of the fascist movement, but there is some kind of cross-pollination there.
Yes. Actually, that very much is what my book is about, is the sort of that history from I date the origins of the alt-right and this current resurgence of right-wing extremism to the 90s and the militia movement organizing, because that was when I first really saw this epistemological bubble forming and that they all share. And really, it has so many of its roots then. But it's also important to understand that that movement, that the 90s Patriot movement, has its roots in radical white supremacy, that most of the ideas that they propagated as part of the Patriot militia movement were essentially drawn from the old white posse comitatus movement, which was an overtly anti-Semitic white supremacist, really vile belief system that, you know, and it was this sort of hyper-localism that we still see expressed nowadays from Cliven Bundy and his bunch. All those ideas that we saw Cliven Bundy spouting and Ammon Bundy spouting at the Malheur were drawn from the Posse Comitatus originally. They got sort of whitewashed by this Mormon right-wing ideologue named Cleon Skousen, who was very popular as an anti-communist in the 70s and 80s in John Birch Society country where I grew up. And he basically took the Posse Comitatus stuff and sort of whitewashed out all the overt anti-Semitism and white supremacy, but still kept the underlying ideas intact. And that was what we saw sort of bubbling up in the 90s with the Patriot militia movement, especially the Montana Freemen. I don't know if you remember them, but I covered their standoff out in Jordan in 96. And they were some of the sort of early iterations of the sovereign citizen movement. And we still have the sovereign citizen movement with us today. They still kill many more cops, by the way, than Black Lives Matter has ever even
ever imagined. Yeah.
Yeah. Ever imagined. They kill them with regularity. And they're certainly the largest threat to law enforcement that I'm aware of.
This is actually a point I want to dig into really fast because So for the audience listening, your president, y'all, not my president, gave a speech last night about the wall. The fear-mongering that the president of the United States does about undocumented people in crime, the fact is that right-wing extremists commit more murders than undocumented people do, and particularly if we're looking at killings of law enforcement. Like, right-wing extremists are a much bigger threat to law enforcement.
Yes.
Not just, like, recently, but over the last 40 years of American history.
That's correct.
Sorry, you were saying.
Yeah, no, well, and of course, they're also a larger threat than supposed Islamist terrorists are as well. That's part of the media issue that we have, is that there's been a lot of hysteria about what terrorism actually looks like. Because we've forgotten that white people can be terrorists too. Well,
some of us haven't forgotten, but some folks have forgotten, I think.
There certainly are folks in the media who have forgotten that, which is sort of the problem we have, because they've created this broad perception in the public that you know, when we talk terrorists, we're talking about somebody with an Arabic name and Muslim and a turban.
Sure.
You know?
So over here on this side, when we're talking about these far right militia movements and these preppers. Mm-hmm. So 3%ers is one of the groups. Is it Oath Keepers?
Oath Keepers.
Oath Keepers, yeah, or another. Yeah. How active are they in Washington State?
Very active. Okay. Especially in Eastern Washington. That's where I would say their base is in Eastern and Central Washington. And we have a very active patriot contingent in northeastern Washington, which is where, of course, the Order was also organizing back in the 1980s. The Order was the overtly neo-Nazi gang that murdered radio host Alan Berg in 1984 and robbed about 28 banks and armored cars before they were finally cornered by the FBI and captured.
Let me ask
captured.
You, tactically, but, do you think it's useful to try to drive a wedge between the prepper, patriot, survivalists, and the fascists? So is it? Cause, yeah. So one thing that I saw is that the 3%ers of Washington State actually condemned the Patriot Front's flyering campaign this week.
That's correct. No, absolutely. It is useful to drive that wedge, and it's important. It's important to keep those lines drawn because, yeah, the Patriot folks really don't like being associated with overt white supremacists and neo-Nazis. They really don't. They don't see themselves as being like that. They deny very loudly that they are racist, even though, you know, their belief system is underpinned by some really deep racism. But, you know, it's really hard to go there and talking over that over with them. But they don't see themselves as racist. They don't have an overt animus towards people of color.
Yeah.
They just have these sort of institutionalized racist attitudes that create problematic behavior, I think.
One of the things always at the forefront of my mind when I'm talking about the far right and their beliefs and like being anti-federal government is that if you look throughout history, the federal government has been the mechanism that has brought civil rights. And so if you have an anti-federal government crusade, the federal government has been the deliverer and guarantor of rights. And that's one of those things that like if you understand that, then all of a sudden a lot of behavior about being anti-government or being pro-government for like black voters makes a lot more sense.
That was exactly what the Posse Comitatus was about. It popped up in the early 60s after Brown v. Board of Education and all the essentially as a response to the civil rights measures. And it was specifically about eviscerating the power of the federal government primarily so that it could not enforce civil rights laws. And everything else was kind of but they found that it was a really easy way to appeal to a lot of other people by saying, well, I also hate the federal government's ability to set farm policy, right?
Sure.
So then they get all the farmers in, right? And this is how they operate.
Well, so for my class, we recently did we do a thing called Lincoln Readers, and we pick books and read them about politics.
Mm-hmm.
And we recently read Barry Goldwater's Conscience of a Conservative.
Mm.
And if you don't understand political dog whistles and don't understand context, Goldwater's writing is actually like pretty damn reasonable. But if you understand political dog whistles and like what he actually means and the stances that he's taking, and I was really excited to hear my students kind of interpret and kind of work through that.
States' rights.
States' rights. What's wrong with states' rights? Hey, Washington state rights. We know we have same-sex marriage and marijuana. What's wrong with states' rights? Right.
Right? Yeah.
But we know what they mean by states' rights in that point. And so just dear listener, that's kind of a point to think about. When you hear somebody making a states' rights argument, like, let's go back to the Civil War. Like, the Civil War is about – y'all, the Civil War is about slavery. Shut up. If somebody says it's about states' rights, yeah, states' rights to own slaves. David, I want to bring you kind of to the present and one of my concerns that I have as a teacher. One of the things that I'm aware of is that radical Islamic terror groups have been able to use the internet to radicalize – propagandize and spread their message way beyond their footprints and their holdings of small territories in Afghanistan, Pakistan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, wherever they are. I think that right-wing extremists have made the same realization. And one of my biggest concerns I have is the number of unsupervised 15 to 24-year-old white males who are watching YouTube videos constantly, and how the algorithm on YouTube basically, like, if you're watching anything, will lead you to some far right fringe stuff in less than half an hour.
Oh yeah, no, it's amazing. Not only that, I mean, we're actually being actively marketed some of this stuff. I do this research on the radical right, and because I spend time on Amazon trying to see if these titles are available, Amazon has actually been sending me emails marketing me hate books. It's just amazing. But
sorry, you're stressing me out.
I know. Well, stressing me out.
The robots are going to be the end.
Yeah. But to really get to your point. Because it's really, really important. It's what I really wanted to talk about today, because I have studied this online radicalization process quite a bit. And this is, yes, the mechanism that's used by ISIS to radicalize people online is almost exactly identical to the process used by the alt-right. It targets young people. It aims for the disenfranchised. It aims for a certain sort of demographic profile. And it makes very similar appeals, right? Especially the appeal of its own sort of internal community. But more than anything, it's the appeal of this sense of empowerment that they offer. And yes, it's actually because I've been dealing in domestic terrorism for a very long time, I actually know a lot of real serious experts in terrorism. And a number of them I know are really, really concerned because they of course, follow online radicalization process with Islamists. And they've seen that not only did the radical right, not just in the United States, but in Europe and elsewhere. I mean, this is happening all around the world. But it not only did it adopt those tactics, it's actually superseded what ISIS has done. It's become much more sophisticated and much more psychologically nuanced. Mm-hmm. And they're very, very smart about how they target young people and how they recruit. And the thing about it is that these things are, you know, that it's really this – part of it is the actual experience of being online is contributing to this, because we're not actually dealing with other people when you have an exchange with other people online. You're exchanging you're having an exchange with bits of data.
Sure.
And so it becomes very, very easy for dehumanization to take place. And that really is the core of what – radical right extremism is about, is the dehumanization process that takes place within it. It's about the politics of dehumanization. And so they're just fitted perfectly to each other. But the reason these terrorism experts I know are so really very overwhelmingly concerned is that for Islamists, the ability to access this stuff online was very limited by the fact that they tend to be a lot of their recruitment base is pretty impoverished. They don't have a lot of access to stuff online. White people have a huge – these white nationalists have a huge natural base that they can reach very quickly through all these – you know, through Western technological culture. Yeah. They have a much bigger recruitment base than ISIS has. So this is why the terrorism experts are going, we may have some real serious trouble. And we're already starting to see it. I think people need to stop and understand. The Parkland shooter was a young man who was recruited or was radicalized online by alt-righters. The shooter at the Santa Fe High School was a white supremacist who was radicalized online. We're seeing young man after young man. I mean, obviously, the sort of the first, the apotheosis of this, the one we sort of see is the one of the first examples of it was Dylann Roof, mm-hmm. in Charleston. But it wasn't just Roof. We're seeing this repeat itself over and over. The Waffle House shooter was a sovereign citizen who was radicalized online. I mean, just time after time after time. And even Stephen Paddock, the Las Vegas shooter, they say they don't understand. They don't have a motive for him. But we do know that he was also totally subsumed with these right-wing conspiracy theories about guns.
So you're not making me feel better about this at all.
No, I don't want to.
So I don't know. Like I know my listener base. I have a lot of people who are parents. What should parents be doing to help their children navigate the internet and not get sucked into this neo-Nazi, fascist, right-wing nonsense that the internet's apparently awash in?
Well, they need to understand part of the dynamic that happens online when kids are recruited by these guys is that they don't – they – like everybody else, you know, when you encounter a psychopath or a sociopath, you don't always recognize that they are working from a totally different frame of reference and understanding of the world than you are. Mm-hmm. And so you're actually you're vulnerable to being victimized by them. And young people in particular are very vulnerable to being victimized by this stuff. So I would say, I mean, the first thing is to understand that your children are being targeted for recruitment, that your children are vulnerable to this because they're young and inexperienced in the world. And I mean, it's just natural. I mean, you can have very street savvy kids and they'll still be vulnerable to this stuff, partly because they actually they use very, very clever kind of street savvy sounding appeals to a lot of these kids. So, you know, and it's happening not just on social media, but it is definitely happening there. It's happening in places like these internet gaming rooms, video game rooms. You know, it's just happening all over. So just I think more than anything, be aware that this stuff is happening. Limit the amount of exposure your young people have to these opportunities for recruitment. Monitor their actually – I would monitor – look, mine's 17 now and just starting college, and fortunately I do – you know, I try to guide my child as much as I can, but more than anything, just you know, and I try not to control, but offer guidance and understanding, so that you know that the child understands that they are vulnerable to this stuff. And I, you know, I don't know. I think awareness, and don't just turn them loose on the internet. You're going to be really sorry if you do. Yeah. So.
I can't help but think about like how important the work of anti-fascist organizers is in combating this.
Yeah.
So like I'm not a member of any Antifa organization and I don't consider myself to be a part of Antifa, but I am anti-fascist.
Yeah.
And so in the same way that you have like a continuum of neo-Nazi to fascist to militiaman, patriot, yada, 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 uh-huh. I think there's a continuum of you need to have actors who are anti-racist, anti-fascist, and then the Antifa people have a role as well, confronting people in the street. And one of the big things that the local Antifa chapters have been doing here in the Northwest is doxing the crap out of these kids.
Yeah.
Because cockroaches hate sunlight.
They sure do.
And neo-Nazis hate exposure of their neo-Nazi views because it makes them unemployable.
Yeah, no, that's why I do what I do. You know, they like to use free speech to undermine us. They use the fact that we offer free speech to undermine democracy and its institutions. And the only thing you can do is turn it back on them. Use your own free speech to expose them. I don't necessarily advocate for any particular course of action when it comes to people, but I certainly believe in exposing them. This is what I do, is that I shine the spotlight on these actors as much as I can. And I think everybody should. And, you know, one of the differences that we have now, Nate, that I think our listeners need to think about is that in the 80s and 90s when I was doing this work, there was an organization, Northwest Organization, run by a former Catholic priest named Bill Wasmuth, called the Northwest Coalition Against Malicious Harassment. And it was basically a kind of SPLC for the Northwest. And Father Bill was a wonderful man, and he was kind of the guy who convinced me to make this my beat. He bent my ear long enough about the value of having sort of institutional memory of this stuff. So a great man, and he passed away from Lou Gehrig's disease in 2001, and the coalition fell apart, and we haven't had anything like it since. But what Bill did very effectively in the 80s and 90s was he really very effectively fought this stuff by getting not just, you know, it wasn't just anti-fascists out there fighting.
Yep.
It was the churches. It was the chambers of commerce, because he got them all to understand that, you know, this stuff's bad for business. This is bad for your churches. This is bad for your congregations. And so this is what's been missing. When I've been covering these Patriot Prayer and these far-right protests, the socialists are out there. And unfortunately, you know, and one of the things that I mean, I appreciate anti-fascists for the most part. They've assaulted me a few times for carrying a camera. And I've tried to explain to them, I'm not going to dox you. I'm not here to take pictures of you, you know. So I'm not really a fan of their tactics. But I also think that they're kind of authoritarian in how they approach things, which is why I was assaulted. And ultimately, I think that particularly a lot of the black bloc folks are actually hostile to democracy. And
so
this is why I think that just having the Antifa out there it's great that they're out there, but we need a lot more people. The only way we're going to negate this violence is if there's thousands of people out there and this whole community standing up and saying, we stand against you. And it's really important to do this because the radical right organizes around the idea that secretly America is behind them. They really sell this idea that they actually represent the real America. And when thousands of people turn out to say, no, you don't, that guts them. It absolutely guts them. And this is what's missing right now.
I think a lot about, and we've covered this talking, how the far right will hide behind the idea of patriotism. They'll hide behind the idea of free speech. They'll hide behind the idea of all these things, anti-communism. Mm-hmm. But in the end, it doesn't matter what they're hiding behind. They're still fascists. They're still neo-Nazis.
That's right.
And like, we need to just kind of own that and plant that flag that we're going to stand against them. So dear listener, if you listen to this right now and you're in the Tacoma area, think about working with Tacoma Against Nazis. They are folks who are from our community, not professional activists, just like everyday middle-class white folks like you who are doing this work. And if you're somebody who does anti-fascist work and you're doing this work in the community, I thank you for doxing people. Please don't assault my guests anymore, but keep on doxing and keep fighting the fash. We normally end the show with a thing called the five. But this conversation is really, really heavy. And I think ending with the five would be a bad look. So what I'm going to ask you instead is what the one for you? What's one thing that you wish everybody listening to this episode would listen to or read or watch? And don't say your book, because I'm going to plug that in a second.
No. I'm not that low class. I wish everyone would watch Pan's Labyrinth.
Whoa.
It's one of the most powerful anti-fascist films I've ever seen, and it's a beautiful work of art.
I have never heard Pan's Labyrinth described as an anti-fascist film. I'm going to have to go and watch maybe tonight. I don't know.
It's set in the Spanish Civil War.
All right. So my guest has been David Nywer. He is the author of Alt America, The Rise of the Radical Right in the Age of Trump. If people want to follow you on the socials, where should they look?
Well, I actually am I'm going to remain affiliated with the SPLC, but I am moving to a new job with Daily Kos beginning January 22nd. So you want to find my work beginning January 22nd, log on to the dailykos.com website.
Man, plug your Twitter account too. Get some followers out of this.
And I also have – I pretty much, I'm very active on Twitter. So if you want, and I do these actually really long threads that I think are pretty educational and entertaining.
I've enjoyed reading them.
So, yeah, just go find my name on Twitter. It's under, spelled N-E-I-W-E-R-T, and it's one of the only ones out there with that spelling. So
it's not a very common name.
Yeah, that's right. It's actually kind of a convenient thing to have a weird name like that. But anyway, yeah, go find me on Twitter, and I write there a lot, and then find me on Daily Coast beginning January 22nd.
Thank you for coming down and bearing Seattle traffic, because southbound I-5 is awful.
Yeah, I came down at noon, so I didn't have to deal with it.
Good move. Wakanda forever, y'all. Channel 253 is sponsored by Alaska Airlines. I'm Nate Bowling, and I fly Alaska. To book your next trip, go to alaskaair.com.
We're all good with profanity here.
So I try to limit people to one F-bomb, but yeah. But you do we're talking about Nazis. Do what you need to do.
Yeah, right. I generally don't, but
this is Channel 253.
I walk
but I do.